Well, several months ago, I had the opportunity. Howard introduced me to a new friend, and I love learning. Probably the best compliment you can ever get is you seem to be a learner. And Howard made a phone call and introduced me to Alan O'Neill, and he's done what I want to do, right? He's done loyalty to his people. He's created a company where he cares deeply about his clients, and he's grown an enormous company. I was talking to some people here from, who was I talking to from Las Vegas that has a plumbing company? Here's the session you've been waiting for. My friend, Alan O'Neill.
Thanks, John. Appreciate it. Good morning. Can everybody hear me okay? So as John said, my name is Alan O'Neill, and I'm a plumber. Any other plumbers in the room? We've got a couple. That's great. So next year, in 2017, I will celebrate my 40th consecutive year in plumbing. Started when I was four. So I think before I tell you about the current venture I'm in, I want to explain to you kind of where I came from, give you some background. So the first thing you'll notice about me is that my accent is a little bit different, right? So I'm actually from East Texas, like really east of Texas, about 5,000 miles from Dublin, Ireland. So grew up in Dublin, Ireland, spent the first 35 years of my life there. Great parents, great childhood. My dad worked for the same company for 49 years. Never drove a car. Didn't know how to drive a car. Cycled to work, up and back, four times a day. About a 3-mile cycle. My dad had an elementary school education. Never was wealthy. He was a laborer in the Irish Glass Bottle Company. So, you know, my dad couldn't give me money, I guess, growing up. He couldn't impart a lot of academic knowledge on me, right? He didn't know a lot. It was grade school education. What he did give me, and it's the greatest gift I've ever gotten, he gave me the gift of work ethic. I watched him get on his bicycle every day for the entire time I lived with him and go to work in the rain, in the snow, and he never complained. I never heard him complaining about work. For many years, he worked 7 days a week. So, although my dad didn't know it, what he gave me was the greatest gift I've ever gotten, and that's the gift of work ethic. So, you know, I'm going through life, I become a teenager, absolutely crazy about soccer. I spent my entire life playing soccer. We used to go out in the playground in front of our house and we'd play soccer from morning till dark, and the game would only end when the guy who owned the soccer ball had to go home, right? We never had a time limit. And you know, that kind of stuck with me, that the guy that owns the ball makes the rules. Kind of my first life lesson, right? And I've often said it to an employee since, hey, I own the ball. So when employees get a little bit out of control, as sometimes they do, sometimes I've got to remind them who owns the football, right? So anyway, fast forward, I meet this young lady. For some reason, she kind of thinks I'm okay, and we start dating, and we get married in 1984. So 1984 was a pretty memorable year for me. I started plumbing in 77, was still with the same company in 84. I get married, we buy a house, life is going great, and in September 84, my boss comes out to the job I'm working on, and he says, we gotta let you go. No warning, no idea it was coming. He says, we gotta let you go. I was like, why? And he says, we don't have any work. We're letting a bunch of people go. So left work and didn't know what to think. You know, I have this new wife, she's working, that's okay. We've got a house, got a car, got dreams, right? But no job. So I stopped at a payphone on the way home. I'm really dating myself now, right? I stopped at a payphone, called Linda, and I said, hey, I got some bad news. She said, what? I said, I was fired, let go, whatever you want to say, you know? And she said, what are you going to do? And unrehearsed and hadn't thought about it, I said, you know, I don't know what I'm going to do, but what I'm going to tell you is that is never going to happen to me again. Life-defining moment, guys. Didn't know it. Hadn't gotten near the mental capacity to kind of realize that I was drawing a line, a lifeline in the sand, right? But I said, it's never going to happen to me again. Now, she was kind enough not to ask me, how are you going to make that happen, right? But so we moved on, and I went back to school at night, and I spent 3 years, three nights a week, getting my what's called the craft technician certificate in plumbing technology, which basically teaches you how to design plumbing. The highest qualification available to a plumber in Ireland. Had to put a lot of time into it. At the same time, we had a baby. It was 1988 when I graduated, so 1985 at this stage when I start going to school. So I'm going to school, it's kind of tough, we have a new baby, all that kind of stuff. So I start getting employed, getting access to better jobs. I start working for Trinity College Dublin, which is one of the most famous universities in the world. At least I can say now I went to college, right? I might have fixed their plumbing, but I went to college. So started working for Trinity College and eventually got hired by Aer Lingus, the national airline, and start performing plumbing work in the airport. Ended up kind of running all the capital expenditure jobs for the airline. And saw an ad in the paper one day for a worldwide lottery for an American green card. Applied, and a year and 3 months later, got a phone call from my wife to say, there's a huge package here from you from the United States. Turned out we'd been pulled out of the lottery, right? Crazy, crazy story. She said, you never told me you applied. I said, well, actually, at the time, I didn't kind of think that was that important, right? And so we started talking about, and through a series of events, my wife had an uncle that lived in Houston. He said, you should come to Houston. My impression of Houston was cowboys and tumbleweeds, right? I assumed people tied their horses up outside their homes, and I didn't know anything about Houston. So I came to Houston on a little vacation, called a big national company here, and asked, what's my chances of getting a job as a plumber? He said, well, do you have a plumbing license? And I said, well, I'm kind of the equivalent of a master plumber back in Ireland. He said, that's about as valuable as an M&M candy wrapper here. And I said to myself, I'll never work for you. And so we decided to give it a chance and come. We came. At this stage now, we have two children and one on the way, which was a very, very, very nice surprise just before we left Ireland, right? So we come here, my wife's pregnant, we're driving around in a rental car, I'm doing job interviews. I get interviewed by a local company here who are members of a national best practice organization. I didn't know it, but one of the most progressive plumbing companies in the city. He hires me. He says, you're going to have to get your license pretty quick. So he gives me a couple of weeks training, and I go out in a job, and I start working, and, you know, it was a little bit of difficulty. The plumbing is slightly different, but I struggle through. And I'm about 2 weeks on the job, and my boss, Jim, calls me in one day and says, hey, we need to talk. And I said, okay. He said, what are you doing out there? And I said, I don't know, I'm just fixing people's stuff, like, and I had never worked in sales before. And like many of you, you know, when we get to the job, we still have to sell it, right? So I'd never worked in sales, but I went out, I was selling the jobs, I was performing the jobs, and everything was going well. So Jim said, look, what I don't understand is you've now gone 2 weeks and you haven't had a zero ticket. What's going on? Like, I kind of thought he might have felt like I was extorting the people or something. And I said, well, honestly, it never occurred to me that they wouldn't buy from me. I didn't know people got zero tickets, right? Now, not that I'm a better salesperson than the rest of the guys, but I just didn't know. And he said to me, do you know we're the most expensive company in Houston? And I said, crap, you never told me that. And I didn't know. I didn't know we were the most expensive, so I just gave the price, right? I gave the price, the customer said yes, and we did it. Now, shortly after that, I started having zero tickets. But it was sort of life sales lesson number one in the United States for me, was that you can't successfully sell your product or service if you're inauthentic, right? I was really authentic that first couple of weeks because I believed I was there to solve the customer's problem. It never occurred to me they might say no. Okay? Never occurred to me. And so there was really very little, there was no resistance on my part, right? I got there and I was like, hey, Mrs. Jones, you know, I'm Alan with Gerald Plumbing. Here to solve your problem. Okay, let's go. It's going to be X dollars. Do it. So anyway, I'm moving on. I'm moving through life. And eventually, I'm doing this about 6 months, and Jim calls me in the office one day. He says, I want to make you service manager. I said, okay. So we make the transition over Christmas. I become service manager. And there's a little bit of pushback from the guys, this new guy from Ireland coming in and being service manager. And Jim said to me, you know, hey, probably what you do is you're probably going to need to, like, discipline somebody or terminate somebody if they're getting out of control, and it will assert your authority on the group. So shortly after that, for a very valid reason, I ended up terminating a guy. And Jim comes and said, it wasn't supposed to be my nephew, right? He just happened to be the most out of control, you know? So as it turns out, Jim was in the process of selling his company to a consolidator. I'm now the service manager. They moved Jim to Denver, and I become the president. So Jim tells me, they're going to make you president of this company. $2 million business. It wasn't huge, right? And I said, well, there's a problem, because I don't know how to read a financial statement. And he says, don't worry, I'll teach you. And I said, okay. Turns out, problems were bigger in Denver than they thought. They had to move Jim pretty suddenly. And my crash course in finance was the bank bag was on his desk, and there was a sticky note on it that said, take this to the bank every day, preferably full. I couldn't make this stuff up, guys. So the first thing I did was I hired a controller. This is now 1998. 1998 time frame. Hired a controller. That controller is still with me today in my company today. But the controller taught me how to read a financial statement, and I spent hours and hours and hours learning how to read a financial statement, because I pretty quickly figured out if I hadn't got my head around the numbers, I could never be successful. So we're going along, everything is great. The consolidator becomes $1 billion in revenue. We're about $4.5 million. And next thing we hear, the consolidator is filing bankruptcy. We were still very profitable, high double-digit profitability, doing really well. But it is a tough place to be president of a company that can't pay its bills, right? So I started to get disillusioned and trying to figure out what I was going to do next, and I decided I was going to start a new business. And Jim, my old boss, calls me from Denver, and he says, what are you going to do? And I said, I have a plan. I'm going to start a new business. And he says, what's your plan? And I said, well, my plan is I'm going to buy a van, and I'm going to run calls in the Woodlands where I live, and it'll be great. And he goes, that's not a plan. He said, let me come back and we'll start the business together, and I only want to stay in for a few years, and then you can buy me out and it'll be good. So we start having what we called Starbucks meetings, where we'd meet in Starbucks and discuss our plan for this new company. So he said to me one day, he said, the first thing you got to do is you got to think of a name for the business. I said, okay. And he said, look, it's got to be alphabetically friendly, because Yellow Pages is where it's at, right? Back then it was. So I went home that night, I opened a beer, I took out a dictionary, true story, started looking down the dictionary. The first word that made any sense was abacus. And the slogan, "You can count on us," came to me immediately. Everyone knows what an abacus is, right? The counting device, right? So I called him and he said, "Wow, that's great. Let's go with that." We got a marketing plan together. We went to the bank, we borrowed some money and started Abacus. Now, our initial goal was if we could get to $2 million in revenue with 5 trucks, we were only going to hire top performers. I mean, that was the joke in itself, but we felt like we were only going to hire top performers. They were going to do about $400,000 a truck. We were going to be $2 million in revenue. We were going to be 15% profitable. We were going to make $300,000 a year, and life is going to be good. Well, that's not how it happened. So we start out, we have 2 owners. We start our business on a Friday. So Friday is our first day in the office. The phone system set up. We're kind of getting things ready because we have 2 technicians starting on Monday morning. We have 2 techs, we have 2 owners, we have 1 customer service rep, and a 6,000 square foot building. What could go wrong, right? So we're in the office on Friday, we're getting stuff squared away, and next thing, the craziest thing happened, the phone rang. Now, I'm talking about the landline, right? Nobody had our number. The phone rang. So Jim looks at me, and I look at Jim, and we're like, "Are you going to answer that?" And he goes, "It's got to be a wrong number. You just answer it." So I pick up the phone and say, "Abacus Plumbing, this is Alan." And the guy said, "You're plumbers, right?" And I said, "Yeah." He said, "This is your landlord. We have a building up the street that's got a leak in the ceiling." I said, "Okay, let me get the address." And Jim is looking at me writing down this address. And I hung up and he said, "Did you just take a service call?" And I said, "Yeah, I did." And he said, "It's for today, right?" And I said, "Yeah." He said, who's going to do it? I said, "Well, I guess I can." And he said, "Do you have tools?" And I said, "No." He said, "Look, I mean, we're only starting, but like, you gotta have the equipment in order to do the work." And I said, "There's a hardware store across the street. I'll just go and buy some tools." So I went and bought some tools and got some parts, and it turned out it was just a pipe clamp. The plumbers will know what I mean, but there's a hole in the galvanized pipe. I put a pipe clamp on it. I charged them $180, and I came back to the office with that check like it was the World Series, right? I mean, I was so proud. The last call I ran, by the way. So we get going. We start actually doing $1 million. We do $1 million in our first year. We do $2 million in the second year. We do $3 million in the third year, right? Just constant hustle, 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 hustle. Now, we thought about joining an affinity group or best practice group or a group like this, and we really, honestly, what we said was, "Look, we've got this. We know this stuff. We've done it before." Wrong, wrong. We made so many mistakes. We made so many bad hires. It was unbelievable. I mean, I could write a book about some of the crazy stuff that went on those first few years. But, you know, eventually we did decide. We decided we were invited to what was called a profit day by a national best practice group. And we went to the profit day, and we went in the car across town. And we were both like, "Okay, let's kind of pinky swear we're not going to join, right? We're just going to listen to the spiel." Well, we ended up writing a large check that day out of our bank advance, right? We ended up writing a large check to join the group. And a couple of months later, the first national meeting was on, so we went. And I'll never forget, back at the time we charged a service fee at $39.95 to go to the call. But we waived it if the customer agreed to do the work. Well, we heard from the stage from one of the presenters, he said, "You know, hey, you've got to charge a service fee. And if you charge a service fee, don't waive it if you do the work. I mean, that's the cost for getting your tech out there. And give the customer the price, and the service fee should be on top of the price." And so we came back and we implemented one of Howard's favorite words, right? We implemented that on Monday morning. I kid you not, we ran 300 calls that month. And we'll call it $40 additional per call. That's $12,000. Paid for our entry into the organization, right? We had one complaint about the $39.95. It's $49.95 today, but we had one complaint about the $39.95. Now, listen, I didn't go to Harvard, but I could figure out if we just gave that money back to that customer, that we were 11,900 ahead, right? So we did. That's when it occurred to me, I might be good at this thing called implementation, right? So we joined a group, and immediately I searched out the successful people in the group. The group that were $5, $6, $10, $12, $15 million in revenue. And I made them my circle of friends. Around that time, and I'm not sure the date, Howard had purchased a new building. And Howard and I were advertising on the same radio show, a guy called Tom Tynan. And Howard invited me to his office one day for lunch. I'd never met Howard. And Howard, you know, we talked, and he told me he needed some plumbing work done. And I said, that's great. And Howard told me about his vision for this. And, you know, that he wanted to travel the world and speak and wanted to be paid to travel the world to speak and wanted to share what he felt like was tremendous knowledge with the group. And he told me two things on that day that I'll never forget. The first one was establish yourself as the expert. And let me tell you when I used that. A couple of years later, there was a major freeze in Houston. Huge freeze. And we knew about it a couple of days in advance, right? This is going to be bad. Pipes are going to burst. All the plumbers are going to be crazy busy. And I remember Howard saying, establish yourself as the expert. So guess what I did? I called the TV stations and said, listen, we're experts at fixing burst pipes. If you'd like to send a camera crew out to follow our people, you're more than welcome. We had Channel 2, Channel 11, and Channel 13 follow us around for 2 days. I can't tell you the value of that free advertising. It was just crazy. So we continued on. Jim, my partner, left in about 2007. Continued on building the business. I happened to be at my attorney's office one day, and we were doing some estate planning, myself and my wife, and my attorney said, hey, Alan, what would happen to Abacus if something happened to you? Now, I had three kids. My eldest daughter was on her way to being a teacher. My younger daughter didn't want to have anything to do with the business. And my son, who I thought might want to do the business, I asked him what he wanted to be when he grew up. And he said, I want to be an eye doctor. And I said, why do you want to be an eye doctor? And he said, because they close at lunchtime on Fridays. So then I realized that I didn't do as good a job imparting the work ethic thing that I got from my dad. But anyway, so he didn't want anything to do with it. So I started to think about, you know, I've either got to run this thing until I'm ready to retire and then hopefully find someone to buy it, or I've got to put a plan together. And that's one of the pearls of wisdom I hope that you guys will take from me today, is that there has to be an end game. Howard says, your business exists for one reason and one reason only. It's to help you achieve your life dreams, right? I had dreams. I mean, there's things I wanted to do. And I figured the best way for me to do that was to create an exit strategy for myself in some way. So as luck would have it, in around 2010, I was approached by a local company that were private equity owned. And we start talking. And it was kind of flattering. It was like being asked out on your first date. We're about $8 million in revenue. I got talking to the people, realized I didn't like them, couldn't work with them, and backed out. But I went and hired a consultant to help me get my business ready to sell. Now, we've been very active in the affinity group. And guys, I'll tell you, if you do one thing, keep coming to stuff like this. Been very active in the affinity group. I had a business coach that I had hired that I talked to, still talk to today. Now, I had my attorney telling me, you need to do something. And so I hired a consultant that had been in mergers and acquisitions for a national company, and he helped me get the business ready. It wasn't for sale, but my thought was, if I ever get the opportunity again, I'm going to be ready. 2011, I get approached by a private equity company out of Seattle. They say, we're interested in buying you. We have a company in Dallas. He offered me what I thought was a crazy multiple and wanted me to leave some money in. I did a deal. The deal concluded in February 2012. I mean, it was life-changing money for me, right? Just crazy. I knew then that if I was run over on the way home that night, that my family were going to be fine forever, right? But I'm still working, I'm still involved, and the idea was to grow the business and sell it again in a few years' time. This is 2011. 2012, our company in Dallas, the founder leaves, and they ask me to be CEO of both companies. I had what I think was one of the most definitely memorable conversations I'll ever have. So we go to this meeting, the founder is resigning, he's telling his people, it's a pretty close-knit group, and he's introducing me as the new CEO, both companies, Houston and Dallas. And I figured it was going to be a 20 or 30 minute speech, right? So Bill gets up there and he says, guys, I've got bad news for you, I'm leaving. Alan's going to take over. You like him? He talks like Bono. 30 seconds and he's gone out the door. So I'm up there and I'm looking at the group and their eyes are this wide, right? I mean, they are freaking out. So I'm like, guys, look, I know you're shocked. I know you're upset. But it's going to be okay. And my private equity guy is at the back of the room going, don't say that, right? I mean, later on I found out he was telling me not to say that. So we go in the office afterwards and he said, hey, why were you telling them, you know, they're shocked? What, I mean, and I said, well, they were. And with that, there's a knock on the door and the air conditioning manager says, one of the techs is vomiting in the parking lot. I think it's shock. So we arranged to meet that guy the next day and I say, hey, Perry, I know how you feel. And he said, with all due respect, Alan, you don't know. It was a four-letter word beginning with S and ending in T, and said, "That's you don't know that, right?" And I said, okay, tell me what's going on. And he said, 12 years ago, I was homeless and bathing in Lake Grapevine. And I met Bill, the owner, and he asked me would I like to be a parts runner. And he said, 12 years later, I own a beautiful home, I have a beautiful car, I have a beautiful wife, I've got three kids, and the man that gave me all that just walked out of my life. So you tell me what you're going to do for me. Probably the toughest moment I've ever had as a leader, guys, and I said, look, Perry, I can't replace Bill, right? I can't do it, but what I can do is tell you that you can trust me, and hopefully you'll allow me to earn your trust. Perry's still with us today. But just moving on, guys, we continue to grow the business. Abacus has gone from zero in 2003 to 32 million today. 165 employees, right? Berkey's the company I took over in 2012 when they were 10 million, will be 18 this year, right? It isn't me. I mean, I just simply steer the ship. It's the team owners, right? It's the team leader, team members, I should say. I will tell you that when we started Abacus, the difference between us and our competition, listen, here's what I knew. I knew that people had no reason to choose us over the competition. They didn't know who we were, right? We were just a new company. So what I figured out we had to do was we had to be available when our competition was not available, right? So we answered the phone live 24/7. You call us at 3 o'clock in the morning, you're gonna get an Abacus team member. We still do that today. So we stole market share from our competition because we were available when they weren't, right? And then we just wowed them with service. I remember Howard telling me, give them the most outstanding service experience ever, right? In fact, I told you about my meeting with Howard. Today is a $32 million business. We still send out referral reward certificates, right? It works. You know, guys, I want to finish up. I told you early on I didn't have a college education. But actually what I do have is a PhD in plumbing. What? What did you just say? A PhD in plumbing, guys, is pride, hustle, and determination. That's what I got, right? No one's more proud of what they do than me. You'll find go a long way to find someone that has more hustle, and you'll find it really hard to find someone that's got more determination, right? I remember being in St. Thomas with my wife on a cruise, and I was watching the guy on the beach renting out the deck chairs. And I said, that's what I want to do. I want to be on the beach renting out the deck chairs. And she said, the problem, Alan, is you wouldn't be happy unless you own every deck chair on the island. So you'd be just transferring one set of issues for another, right? But what I also tell you guys is this, we all have one thing in common. Everybody in this room has one thing in common. And I'm saying this as an immigrant, and I'm saying it really sincerely. Everybody in this room woke up this morning in the greatest country in the world for opportunity. Bar none. Bar none. It's the greatest country in the world for opportunity. Right? So if, like me, you watched the debate last night and got depressed that out of 350 million, they're our best too, right? Don't let that control your destiny. I remember in 2008 when there was a huge recession going on, at every meeting we told our people, we will not participate in this recession. And I remember a client calling me. We have a commercial client called Galperti Industries. They're an Italian flange manufacturer. And the guy called me and goes, your people are robots. They're telling me they're not participating in the recession. Guys, it's only a problem if you buy into the problem, right? It really is. It's only a problem if you buy into the problem. I will tell you, I am absolutely 100% not the smartest guy in the room. There's no way. What I am is a great implementer. What I don't mind doing is stealing ideas, right? I'll do it all day long. I'm passionate about it, right? And I can tell you guys, if you take care of your people, they will take care of you. 100% of the time. I really appreciate the time, guys. Thank you so much. Thank you. Woo! Thank you. Woo!
Take care.
Thank you. Yes, sir.